Hey there, everybody. It's Tina Conrad, aka DJ Breast Cancer, and I'm here with a very, very special guest from my home state of Michigan. Her name is Kathy, and she describes herself as a Jesus disciple. She is a cancer survivor, almost 5 years, and she is just very resilient, very amazing, very purposeful, and very changed from her cancer. So just excited to have her on DJ Breast Cancer. So welcome, Kathy. Nice to have you.
Hi, thanks for having me, Tina.
Well, I'm so excited. We were chatting all things, you know, Detroit and cancer before we got rolling here, but would love to know in your own words, a little bit about who Kathy is.
Oh, that's a loaded question.
It is. You can tell me as much or as little as you want.
Okay. Well, my name is Kathy Thompson. I am getting close to my 5-year anniversary for Woo-hoo! Breast cancer. Yay. Yay. So, July of 2016, I, was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. For those of you who don't know what triple negative is, it's a little bit more of the deadly version of it because there unfortunately isn't, once you finish treatment, there isn't that 5-year pill that people talk about that you can be able to take to lower the possibility of it returning. So I don't know what caused my breast cancer. I don't know what I can do to stop it from returning. So there's a lot of things that I've been doing to change my life and change the things that I do to avoid that possibility from happening. I'm also a licensed professional counselor. I have a practice out here in Detroit, so I'm also counseling people. And that's sort of the short and sweet about me.
I love that. And kind of this control what you can control, you know, so whether it's health, whether it's wellness, whether it's, you know, your spiritual, you know, an emotional kind of wellness. Like, I think you are a great example of like taking what you can control and doing the best with it.
Yeah, I tend to run with it. I like to say that I, you know, I'm one of those people. I like to control things, but there's obviously things that we can't control. I couldn't control my cancer diagnosis. I couldn't control my mother passed away of cancer. My father has been diagnosed with cancer now for a couple of years. So there's a lot of stuff out there that we cannot control. And as a therapist, I know that there's a lot of stuff out there that we can't control, but the things that I can control, I try to do the best that I can to make sure that I'm living, you know, my best life and living a healthy life, as healthy of a life as possible. So.
I love that. Well, take me back a little bit to the diagnosis. So obviously really shocking, but you kind of had a few people that kind of led you in a direction of maybe thinking, you know, I'm going to take a look at my health or I'm going to get a mammogram. And I too kind of had, it started with a coworker. It started with kind of this gut feel that maybe something's, you know, just not right within my own health and caused me to, you know, get a check. And so would just kind of love to know like how it triggered you to, you know, start your mammogram screening process.
Well, I was 43 at the time, and there was a lady that I was working with, another therapist that was a cancer survivor, and she had talked to me about how she'd been in remission for quite a long time. And, you know, just, we were just chatting it up. And then I thought, oh, you know, I should, you know, I'm no spring chicken anymore. I really should be checking this stuff more often. And I did, and I felt this lump and I thought, oh, okay. So the worst thing I could do, I Googled it.
Yep. Don't
well,
do that.
You know, and I tried to, you know, go on the lighter side of things. And they're apparently there is this, I guess a gland that can, really get, I guess, I don't know. There's a gland during the time of the month, it mm-hmm. can, you know, appear that there's something there when it's really not. Well, I checked, I felt it. I thought, okay, there's a lump there. Don't freak out, Kathy. Don't panic. And then what I did was I said, okay, so if it's not gone in a couple of weeks, I need to go to the doctor. And I did, I went to the doctor. I want to say it was July 10th or 11th, and they immediately sent me for a mammogram. And then they immediately wanted me to do a biopsy like the day after. So I was like, this does not look good. you know, I've never been to had a biopsy before. So, and I've had mammograms before. So the fact that they were sending me to a mammogram the day after, I knew that something was wrong. And it was just, it was terrifying. It was terrifying sitting in the hallway, just, you know, having this feeling, knowing that something wasn't right, and that it was still, there was still this lump in the side of my chest. So
and
that's kind of how it started.
And you had like no time to process. I mean, like it all kind of happened within literally, it sounded like a week. Like it was really crazy from the time where you,
yes,
kind of,
it was less than 5 days. It was less than five days. So I think it was on the 10th I had the mammogram. I'd have to go back and look at a calendar, but I was on the 13th or the 14th. It was like a Wednesday. I was diagnosed with cancer. They called me on the phone, and it wasn't even a doctor that I knew. It was a nurse, just some nurse making phone calls. And I was, you know, 20 minutes away from doing a counseling session, which is why I knew it was on a Wednesday. So here I am, and I, you know, you get your professional voice. Hello. Yeah, this is Kathy. Mm-hmm. Oh, I have cancer. Oh, okay. Okay. So you want me there on Monday? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Thanks. Bye. I just like you, I had like the professional voice on because I just didn't like, I was shocked that I was told so impersonally over the phone. I got home and I told my husband, I remember he was laying in bed because he worked midnights. And I said, they told me I had cancer over the phone. Like, and then I had to see a patient who was complaining about just the most minor, you know, issues, like nothing compared at that time to a cancer diagnosis. That was probably the hardest session I think I've ever gone. He's complaining about cigarettes. I don't know. It's like, okay. Yeah. Okay. So anyways, and I said, look, I said, they want me to come in on Monday. And I said, I absolutely don't want to go to this place. I want to go to Carmano. So can, you know, so he ended up setting it up, and they typically, they a 3-day turnaround is not what, you know, the offices do, but he made that happen. So Monday morning I was at Carmano. So I'm starting off my treatment plan and diagnosis and all that good stuff. So.
Wow. So then I know you had, you know, the Red Devil and followed by radiation, and surgeries as well, a port put in, you know, so really, you know, intense, obviously, you know, sort of regimen. And I can relate, you know, to all of those. The Red Devil for me was the absolute worst, but would just like to know, you know, how did faith, I guess, you know, play into that cancer diagnosis and then the early stages of that cancer journey?
Well, I've had people ask me that know that I'm a believer. They've asked me, you know, do you believe that God gave you cancer, or how could you believe in a God that gave you cancer? And I said, God didn't give me cancer. That's not how it works. I may have been diagnosed with cancer, but that's because of, we live in this world that is filled with issues there. Yeah. You know, it's a faulty world. I just happen to be the person that it was, that unfortunateness was, you know, bestowed on. So, you know, a couple months into, I was diagnosed in July, and then I got my partial mastectomy in September, I want to say August, and then September I started chemo. Well, I was in a Bible study fellowship. So for all my girls out there, Bible study fellowship. So Bible study fellowship was on a Monday, and on Tuesday was to be my first round of chemo. And I had no idea what I was walking into. So I'm sitting in the church. I'm sweating. I'm just terrified of what people are going to think. Do they know I'm wearing a wig? And, you know, I cut my hair at that time. And I could just clearly hear God speak to me, just as clear as I am speaking to you. Wow. Kathy, do not leave this church until you talk to your girlfriend. And I said, about what? And she had been eating some candy. And I thought, gosh, it's really bizarre. Like, why, you know, she's 40 some years old. Why is she eating bags of candy? So anyways, I associated it to my addiction to candy, because we know that sugar feeds the cancer. Doesn't cause the cancer, but it feeds the cancer. So I was like, something's going on there. So I said, okay, I'll listen. I had never gone upstairs to the kids' room. She was watching over the kids that were part of the program. And I said to her, I said, Cheryl, hey, can you do me a favor? She's like, sure. What do you want? Like, just nonchalantly. I said, would you mind getting a mammogram? Sure. No problem. I'm like, wow. Okay. I'll see you next week. Like, I thought that was so easy.
Yeah.
2 months later, she was diagnosed with cancer. I don't believe that I did anything but be, faithful to what, you know, God asked me to do. I could have left that day. I could have walked out. I could have said, whatever, but I didn't. He asked me to do something. I had no idea what was going to happen. And then she ends up getting diagnosed. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I think she had the same type of cancer that I had. So her and I went through cancer like at the same time. So the things I was doing, she was like 2 months behind.
Mm-hmm.
So crazy, crazy feeling. So at the end of treatment, I got to share with the entire group of ladies what had happened. And my hair was so short at the time when I shared. It was very surreal. To have her son come up to me and say, thank you for saving my mom's life. And I just looked at him. I'm like, I just did what I was told, that I can't take credit for that. Like, I can't, please don't put that on me. I did not do that. I just did what God asked me to do. Yeah. So I just feel like that's sort of, you know, you just do what you're being asked. I mean, I don't think God talks to everybody in the same way. I've heard people talk about that. I don't think God talks to us all in the same way, but when he does talk to you, listen, because there's a reason, and you might not find out what that reason is, but I did. I found out just a couple months later how important that day was. Mm. So. That's
so beautiful. And I don't know too many people where they do feel God directly spoke to them. My cousin was one of them. She lives actually in Michigan, and it was in the still of a night and, you know, a financial hardship. And she truly heard a voice, and it just basically said kind of like, hold on, you know, just believe. And there is something about the stillness. Like there are times like now in these COVID times where I feel maybe it's not so much the voice, but a nudge or a notion or a sign, or, and if you are still enough to listen and to, you know, look for these signs, I think you'd be amazed at what you can find. And so it's such a beautiful story that you shared, and it's kind of in the stillness of church, and, you know, you weren't sure why you were the messenger, but you just, you know, felt compelled, you know, to share this message and to really, you know, make a difference in someone's life, you know, and I think that's such a beautiful story.
Anytime I hear of a voice like that or a nudge, I can't say that I'm always faithful in doing it, because I've kicked myself a few times when something has happened and I felt that nudge and I thought, no, that doesn't make sense. Or, you know, you're driving somewhere and you see somebody pulled over, or you see something happen and you're like, oh, I should have pulled over. You know, just that, like, you know, that there's something that you're supposed to be doing. Same thing happened. I was just shared this with a friend of mine. Before COVID happened, I was at a Home Depot, and I mentioned that I'm a therapist. I used to work with nonverbal autistic children, and it was right after Christmas time, and he had come into the store with his parents. He was about 17 years old. He had come into the store, and he was just so overstimulated with all the Christmas lights and all of the, you know, the bright colors and everything. Mm-hmm. And he was just, you know, vocalizing. He was nonverbal. but he was 17 years old and he was hitting his mom and just screaming and people were staring. And I thought, oh, I should have stopped. I should have stopped and went over there. But it's very different when you're working with people that are willing and open to come in to treatment for, you know, nonverbal autism than just going out to a random stranger. And I kick myself to this day for not going over there because the mom was literally on the ground at the front door and he was like hitting her and screaming and running off and, you know, throwing things. I mean, it was just a hot mess. And I can't believe to this day that I did not do something, you know, because I knew what that was. So I think if placed in that situation again, that nudging, I think that me beating myself up is telling me that I need to like listen a little bit more closely. But
yeah. That's funny. I have an instance in like, I was in like my first year in college and I was working at a golf course and a storm came up and they told us like, if a storm comes up, you're supposed to blow this air horn and like tell the people to come in. And like, I didn't do it because I felt like everyone would know that a storm was coming in. Like it just seemed apparent, you know, and later to find out that, you know, people were out there and like, I just felt like, you know, and they were okay. Like the story ended okay. But I just never have like, and someone in our town like ended up dying from a freak accident in a barn because of the wind, because of the storm. And it just made me really think like, you don't really regret the things that you do. You do regret kind of the things that you don't do. And you feel like you have an opportunity to make a difference. And I kind of, to your point, I still remember this, you know, so viscerally, like years and years and years later, but I would do something nowadays. Like, I like to think that I would do something, you know, so it's more kind of putting yourself out there and it's hard, you know, to your point, like we live in a society where people can sue, people can do a lot of different things. You might not have felt compelled, you know, to interrupt, you know, these people that you don't know, they're not your clients, you know, but you just kind of think a little bit differently. And I think even cancer kind of makes you much more action oriented, you know, than maybe you were. And I loved in reading a lot of your, you know, information about you and who Kathy is that you talk a lot about cancer and then COVID and how a lot of the triggers are actually the same. And it was kind of interesting. I don't know, just from your point of view, I would love to know a little bit about, did anything from COVID kind of make you feel like you were going back through cancer again or have any of those feelings, you know, that you encountered, you know, during cancer?
Absolutely. So during COVID, you know, we're alone. You know, we're not reaching out to people quite, you know, physically. And so a lot of that stuff happens when you're in treatment. And this is not to bash people, but this is just the reality. So when I got a cancer and I've read all the stuff on Instagram about it, you know, people talking about how people take off, it's just the reality. You tell somebody that you have a life-threatening illness, and some people just check out. They don't know what to do. And some people they're just at a loss. So they don't reach out to you. They don't talk to you. They don't check in on you. Or you have those that do check in on you. And those that do send like care packages that maybe you haven't talked to in years, or you know, that maybe you haven't seen in years. And then once you're done with treatment, it's all gone. You get nothing. There's no more checking in on you. There's no more treatment appointments. There's no more, you know, hey, how are you doing? I used to get a text message from a lady. She would, you know, get done working at the bar and her brother had gone through cancer. So she would always check in on me because she knew I was up. I mean, you have this crazy schedule because of the treatment. And yeah, she would check in on me. And that was just wonderful because you can tell. There's an element that you can tell when somebody really is thinking about you and really praying for you. There's just something different in them. And I get it that the people that checked out weren't mentally ready to deal with me getting sick. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with somebody, you know, hey, we were friends, but I couldn't be friends with you while you were sick because I thought I was going to lose you. Because that's the reality. These aren't heartless people. they just don't know what to do. So it feels a lot like COVID because now you've got people that are scared to touch you, scared to reach out to you. You know, they're dealing with their own fear. You know, cancer is very much an individual experience. I like to call it like being born into this world and dying. You do those two things all by yourself. Nobody else, not even if you have a twin, those things don't happen at the same time. That is an alone journey. You are alone when you come into this world, and you are alone physically. You are alone when you leave. There's nobody else that's going to follow you in there. Nothing but God. Yeah. But it's COVID's kind of the same thing. There's a lot of this feeling of being alone. You know, I can go to the store and not make eye contact with a single person. Even though you're smiling underneath your mask, people don't see that, you know? So there's a lot of similarities to it. There's a lot of similarities.
Yeah. And I try to smile with my eyes under my mask, just teasing. But no, it's really strange. And I've even run into a friend in the grocery store, like, when it was kind of more the height of like COVID, and, you know, you see a person and there's just, you know, a different social norm, you know, like a person that you would have normally, you know, if you hadn't seen them in 6 months, you would have hugged them, you would have, like, you know, embraced them. It would have been like this joyous occasion, but yet, you know, you stand, your, you know, in this case, I think 10 feet apart, both have masks. We're both like, just trying to figure out like, what is this new normal that we're like under, you know, and it is really difficult. And I think it goes the same kind of to this cancer journey. And I had another guest explain that they felt compelled to share the grace of God to people who don't get cancer, like that just don't get the experience, don't get the empathy, don't get like what is needed, but to have a grace to like, not let that really weigh you down as the individual. But I think it's really beautiful to hear your side of it from a therapist side, and that people just don't get it. And, you know, they're maybe doing the best they can. Maybe that's their fears, you know, all of that sort of thing. But it's really great to hear it from just a professional standpoint too, just because I do get asked that a lot, you know, what can I do? Or how do you feel when people don't do enough? You know, it's definitely a topic, you know, for the community.
Oh, there was a one that I just saw recently, how people are just steaming mad when people say to them, oh, you know, God has a reason for everything. And you know what? That doesn't make me mad.
I know.
It doesn't make me mad at all. I know people are like dropping F-bombs, like, how dare you F and say this to me? Da 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 da. God's plan. But no, I do feel like this. God didn't cause me to have cancer. God didn't give me cancer. But you best believe that he used that, because my life, the way it was 5 years ago and the way it is today, totally different.
Yeah.
Totally different.
And I don't share that with people, like, oh, you know, if obviously they've been delivered bad news or, you know, have something bad, like I don't follow up the conversation with, you know, everything happens for a reason, because it has, there is a time and a place maybe for everything. But I agree with it now that I am much more into the word of God and see like his actions in work. It is, I do feel it's true. However, it's not my job to really impose that on other people and make them feel that in the heat of a moment. Like I would rather them experience that themselves and feel that rather than me tell them, you know, how they should feel or.
Yeah. I don't know that I would say that to somebody, cause it's obviously a, you know, a very heated topic, but I'm thinking it. There are times that I'm thinking it, you know, I tend to, I say this, but I don't know, maybe I'm not looking at myself from the outside. I'd like to think that I'm a very optimistic person. I like to try to look at things, whether I'm successful or not. I like to look at things from a positive perspective. So I do see that the cancer caused some really great things. Did it cause some bad things to happen? Yeah, it did. But in the grand scheme of things, I think things are better as a result, because I am living my life a completely different way than what I did 5 years ago. And I feel like I was, you know, sort of going down the wrong path and not really being faithful and not really listening and to what I'm, you know, what my calling is. would I be here with you talking about a completely different topic or be talking to anybody on a podcast? No, no, I would not. Would I have my business? No, I would not, because those things happened as a result of me having cancer and wanting to help other people. My counseling practice, where, by the way, I employ 5 people and several other contractors, and we currently serve, since I opened it up in late 2017, so we'll just say 2018, since 2018, we've served 500 people, and I just started hiring people about a year and a half ago, like therapists. I was doing it all on my own before. So we're serving, currently we have about 160 clients that we're serving. So all of those things would have not happened had I not gone through cancer, and had I not said, you know what, if not now, then when? Mm-hmm. So that's where the inception of the practice came from, is because I learned so much about my journey going through cancer and the changes that I had to make in my life, that naturally I wanted to share those with clients of mine. And so sharing those with clients, not all my clients know that I went through cancer, because as you can see, I don't look like I had cancer or have. But the reality is that I'm in that, I'm in that triple negative area, that there's a possibility it could return. So I constantly think of that. That's something I'm sure you've talked with other people before. Mm-hmm. It's not something you can forget. You don't forget that you had cancer. I still have aches and pains. I still have trouble going up and down the stairs. You know, I still have limited mobility in my left arm. There isn't going to be a time. I thought my neuropathy, and for those that you don't know what neuropathy is, it's numbness in the tips of your fingers, complements of Andreamycin, which is Red Devil. So anyways, I thought the neuropathy had been gone. Well, no, I'm just used to it now. So I had some problems with my plumbing, and a plumber came over, and I was touching both of the pipes. And I told him, I said, oh my gosh, both of the pipes are hot. And he's like, no, this one's warm and that one's cold. And I just didn't even want to explain to him, but I literally felt hot on both of the pipes. One was ice cold, and the other one was just warm, but they both felt cold to me. I'm sorry, they both felt hot to me because of the neuropathy. So I thought the neuropathy was gone. No, I'm just used to it now.
Not so much.
I'm just used to it now.
I know, so it is kind of crazy that you just get used to certain things and used to some of the pain, and it just kind of is the new way of life. So thank you for sharing that. I do think, you're close to 5 years out. I'm, 7 years out, and it is like, it's sometimes difficult, charting this, life after cancer journey, and some things, continue. It is and can be like a chronic disease where it's kind of ongoing, and you have to kind of learn to navigate it, learn to accept it, learn to find ways to cope with it, and, learn ways to like not have it like take over your life. And to your point, like if you just focused on a recurrence, you would just be in a ball and like not leave your house ever, and you have to kind of learn how to deal, and it's not easy.
So as a therapist, I teach clients about how anxiety has an impact on your physical health. So a great example would be, think about if you have to do like public.
Okay. So you were saying if you're nervous and if you are a public speaker.
Okay. So if you're a public speaker, you ought to speak to a group of people. What ends up happening is you end up getting a stomach ache. You end up, getting dry mouth. You end up might have diarrhea later, just from the anxiety and the nerves of what's going on. So that anxiety is having an impact on your physical body. So it's the same thing, just span it out even longer. If I continue to have anxiety over the possibility of cancer, I am going to stress my body out to the point where it is going to happen. I'm going to have physical side effects that are going to allow, disease to come back to come back and invade my body because I'm not taking care of it. So I need to put the anxiety in check. So as a therapist, I do teach that, that, you know, anxiety can actually cause more physical ailments for you.
Hmm. That's really interesting. And I mean, I've heard it and it's so true, but to kind of hear it from your voice, like it does, you know, there's physiological, you know, responses that happen to stress and to trauma and to everything, you know, that, you know, kind of invades our life. I do just want to thank you for like talking about this change of perspective, because for me, it was very, cancer changed me. And, you know, I like to think mostly good ways, but I am a different person coming out of it than going into it. And I know that you feel that way as well.
Yes, I am not the same person that I was before. It's impossible for me to be the same, person. There is this directness. There is a new focus. There's this element of now I've kind of looked death in the face and said, you know, there's going to be a point when I'm not going to be here anymore. And so I, you know, looking at it from that perspective, I don't want to play around with things. I want to be very meaningful about what I'm doing, where I'm going, and how I'm spending my time. Because we only have so much of it. We only have so much time. And so I see how I can, you know, what the business has taught me is that I see the impact that I can have on one or two or three or four people. Imagine just multiplying that and what that is going to look like. What will that do? Not only for me, what will that do to other people around me? And just kind of getting rid of any toxic thoughts that I might have, and maybe even some toxic people. It's just not worth it. It's not worth the effort to do that. Now, I'm not saying like get rid of all toxic people. Certainly they need some love and attention, but you know, just not spending as much time on that kind of stuff. I mean, it's a daily process though.
No, I appreciate it. And I think that is so great. And all of those things I can relate to, the new focus, it, like life has to have meaning, and you just don't have time to like waste and like sit around. So thank you for sharing that. It's so good. And it's kind of refreshing to hear it, you know, from other people, and especially someone who kind of understands it from just like a professional standpoint too, that's, you know, a normal and normal process, and probably a sign of growth, you know, that you are coming out of this a better person.
Yes. Yes, I would agree.
So I'd love to know from you, I've been asking every guest this season for their favorite Bible verse and kind of like what it means, you know, to you as a person. And I know just in general, we were chatting, you know, before we started recording that, you know, your faith has taken such a more direct role like in your life, but would love to know your favorite Bible verse and just, you know, what impact it has on you.
Oh, Luke 6:31, treat others as you would like to be treated. I think that's been a long struggle for me. There have been some people in my life, that are either currently in my life or have, you know, have moved on, that treatment has changed me, has altered me. And like, I won't even say like changed, like, isn't like a big enough word, has literally like, I've done a hard right as a result of it. So if somebody could pop into my life temporarily or even permanently and change the trajectory of my life, can you imagine the impact of Luke 6:31? Mm-hmm. Treat others as you would like to be treated. I think sometimes we forget that and we flip it around. I've had people flip it around and say, treat others as they treat you. That's not what it says.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating. Like my church talked about it today. They were talking about, you know, treating, you know, people with love and kindness, maybe even the people that you don't necessarily like, you know, people who are maybe would be your enemy. And it is challenging. It's challenging to do. You know, and I find it a challenging task working with teenagers because one of the things that I hear from them is, well, she hit me first. they did this first, so I have every right to do something back, you know. And I said, well, so this is how I explain it to teenagers. I say, well, if they hit you and you don't hit back, you can file a police report against them. But if you hit them back, you're kind of in the same boat. So although our society teaches us that, you know, you have a right to defend yourself, we don't have to. There's no, God does that. We don't have to do that. So treat others as you would like to be treated, because you know what? That is the biggest impact that you can make in somebody's life. When somebody treats you like crap and you're nice back to them, they're shocked. They're shocked. Yeah. Like, think about it. If someone flicks you off when they're driving, your natural instinct is to flick them back off. But if you wave and smile, like, oh, like all kinds of confusion happens. It's just like, they just don't, you know, they just don't know how to respond. Mm-hmm. So if you really want to throw somebody off and they do something rude to you, do something extremely nice, not out of spite, do something nice back to them.
Oh, I love it. So, yeah, I think it's
the most impactful thing that can happen.
I love that. And I might have to try that the next time.
It's a great social experiment that you can try.
Yes, I did drive and I did match somebody's anger. It's been probably 9 months, but yes, I think the next time I would try that. That sounds like much more.
So here's the reality to that. I talk to my adult clients like this as well, because my office is near I-75. So I'm always using I-75 as a, I'm like, if somebody cuts me off on I-75, I have a decision to make. I can decide whether they didn't see me, whether they're just being a flat out a-hole, like they're just literally just being a jerk, or maybe they just got the worst horrible news they've mm-hmm. ever received. You know, you have no idea. Maybe their wife or family member is in the hospital dying, and so they're just boom, just off and going. We have no idea what is going on. I know for me, I have cut people off unintentionally. And I'm like, ooh, like, sorry, I'm bad. There isn't any hand signal we can make that's going to translate to, oops, my bad. So I know I have done it unintentionally with no ill will towards somebody. I know it can happen to other people. So we, unfortunately, our brains automatically go to, you were just trying to kill me. You were just mm-hmm. trying to be a jerk. And it's not always the reality. Are there jerks out there? Yeah, there's people out there that are just out to cause mischief. But knowing that you have a choice of like, okay, it's not always default bad guy or bad girl. It's not always that default. So looking at it from that perspective, I think it causes some change in thought and hopefully some change in behavior next time.
Yeah, no, I love that. So thank you for sharing that. It is a beautiful thing. And we do have a choice with all of our actions. And I love that. I had a really difficult boss, and she's no longer at the company that I'm at, but you know, I used to feel like I was going to church every week just to kind of work on that relationship. And now like she's gone, but I've been putting her front and center within my prayer journal each and every month, because I still feel like she needs prayers, and, you know, and maybe my heart's not completely healed either. So, you know, just kind of, you know, making God aware of that relationship each and every day, and making him aware of, you know, whatever his intervention can be, you know, to kind of help that. So, you know, I felt like you can kind of say, well, I don't need to worry about that anymore, you know, but you also can say like, well, I still have some work left to do, you know, and can work on that relationship. So, and I've been kind of thinking of, you know, even writing a letter to her, and maybe the first one I write isn't one that I send, but, you know, just kind of writing it. So I've been working on that. I think we all have, you know, areas of kindness and, you know, empathy and everything. And even as a cancer survivor, like I feel like I'm a very empathetic person, but it still doesn't mean, you know, as a Christian, as someone who just loves Jesus, like that there aren't things that we can continue to work on too.
Well, that's the one way that that's how Jesus lived his whole life, is doing wonderful things to horrible, like, I won't say horrible people, but I mean, look at all the disciples.
Yeah.
I mean, they were not a group of great, you know, honoring men. Men and women. I mean, they weren't. So, I mean, but it took his kindness towards them, even as they were deceiving him and denying him and betraying him. He was mm-hmm. still kind to them. And that's where I think change happens. Change doesn't happen when you force somebody's hand, because, you know, it's almost like saying to somebody, tell me you love me. Tell me you love me right now. Okay, yeah. You're going to get, maybe you'll get compliance. But what feels better? Somebody being told and complying, or not being told and doing it? Mm-hmm. It's such a big difference. So, I mean, when you're kind to somebody who's mean to you, they're going to reflect on that. So that's where the change happens, being nice to people. And unfortunately we've not done a great job of that. I think it's getting a little bit better. I'd like to think it's getting better, but yeah, you cannot change people. So there's an image that comes in my mind, and I hope this isn't too off topic. There was a lady, I think she was out in Ann Arbor. This was several years ago, and it was such a powerful picture. There was a member of the KKK doing some kind of street parade or whatever, and he got in the wrong crowd of people, and people started to beat him. And he was on the ground, and they were kicking him and throwing things at him. This young African-American lady jumped in and covered her body over his so he would not get harmed anymore. You can't tell me that did not change that man's life. Mm-hmm. And throwing sticks at him and condemning him was not going to change him. It's just going to bring about more hate. But that woman, that African-American woman throwing herself on him, totally, I can't imagine it didn't. Wow. There's no way it couldn't have.
No, and I get chills when you say that's, you know, story. It's a real story. It's not a parable. Yes. It's not, you know, it's real. Oh, thank you for sharing.
Yes. That. So yes. Beautiful. It just popped into my head. I love that story. I can't remember how many years ago it was, but she was great. A courageous, courageous woman.
Yeah. Yeah. And what a lesson. Like you're right. I ask every guest, you know, we've had tons of tips, you know, throughout this entire episode, but I ask every guest for a Tina tip. So it can be, you know, a practical advice. You know, it can be something in the heart of the battle. It can be something trying to navigate life after cancer, but would just love to know one bit of advice, or maybe two, that you would like to impart to the listeners today.
Oh, a Tina tip. Okay. Well, you know, I've gone through some very difficult things beyond the cancer diagnosis. You know, my mother passing, my father being diagnosed, and the ending of my marriage as a result of the stresses of cancer. So I would say the Tina tip would be, if it feels difficult, it's probably the right thing to do. And I say probably, cause I don't want to do a blanket statement, but I have noticed that every time I do something that I don't necessarily want to do, it's not something I'm like, yay, this will feel really great if I did it. It's, ugh, that's so hard. I really don't want to do that. But you know, at the end of the day, it's the right thing to do. Was it easy to listen to that still small voice telling me to go talk to my girlfriend about getting her cancer? That one was relatively easy. But there were other moments that, you know, were not so easy, to do. You know, as a believer, I thought I needed to remain in my marriage, but it didn't happen. It has to be a two-way street. So it's difficult things. I think the hard thing is, I feel like God's calling me to do something more than what I was doing in the past. And that requires 100% of my attention, as much as I hate saying that. Would I love to be married again? Yes, 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 I would. But that's not what he's calling me to do. Okay. Just tell with my voice like that. That's not what he's calling. So is it difficult to follow that? Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult. I want to jump back in the dating game. I want to jump back in and start doing what I want to do, but this is what I'm being called to do. So, yeah, if it's difficult, if it's a difficult thing to do, it's probably the right thing to do. And I shared with you, we didn't record this part, but I shared with you, you know, I probably wasn't difficult on my part, but it was difficult for the doctors. I think you know what I'm going to share here.
Yeah, share.
So let me just preface this. I can be a little stubborn, but stubborn in a good way, I would like to say. If I don't feel like it's right to do, I'm not going to do it. So most people don't know that when you go for radiation, so I had surgery, I had 8 rounds of chemo, and then I had 30 days of radiation. So in the radiation, in order for this machine to line you up, they have to have something on your body to line you up with. So they typically tattoo you with something very small, the size of a freckle, but there are 4 tattoos. And, you know, the one goes on each side of you on your sides where your ribs are. And then there's 2 that go, one that goes in the center and then one on the top of your chest to line the machine up. So every time you come in for radiation every day, it hits the same part. Now let's put this into perspective. My cancer was on the left side of my body where my heart is. So we really want to make sure that they are lining this machine up correctly and not going further and shooting radiation into my heart. And let me tell you what radiation does. If people don't know, it burns you. It's burning. It's like the microwave. It's burning you. Mm-hmm. So I told the doctors, absolutely not. I'm not getting tattoos. You're not tattooing me. So find another way. So they ended up using Sharpie marker and some surgical glue and these stickers, and they only had to replace them once. The side effect to that was that the radiation did end up hitting my esophagus, and it burned away a piece of the skin in my throat. And so I had to get intubated, and they had to cut out a piece in my throat because it was literally a piece of dead skin, like a chunk of dead skin in my throat. So there were some consequences to me doing that, but I was the first person to my knowledge, at Karmanos to have that done. And there have been many, because of my stubbornness, there have been many people that have been able to go through radiation without the tattoos. As small as they are, I don't have them.
Yeah, and you didn't want another, you know, physical reminder of what you'd been through. So I think it's great that you have your convictions and you stood by it, and you know, you found a way that kind of paved a way for others after you too.
Right. So my stubbornness helped out other people, but I mean, it's just like one of those things that I had done a little bit of research. I knew there were a couple of other options that they could pick. I am very fair skin. So I thought, you know, henna could work, and that is an option that they can use as well. But, you know, talk, if you're going through treatment, talk with your doctor about alternative things. Some things are going to float and some things are not. So you just have to, you know, kind of work with your doctors on this stuff. And the doctor that I had worked with me. So if it's difficult to do, it's probably the right thing to do. It was difficult for my doctors. It wasn't that one wasn't really difficult for me to do. It's just sort of natural for me to be a little scrappy like that. But
I love that. I love that. And I love, you know, like sometimes it's going to be hard. It's going to be tough. And I even put as one of my goals this year, personal goal, I don't know what this thing is, but just doing something that scares me. And I think that right. That's okay. And each year that's an okay goal to have, you know, that it, I don't know what that thing might be, what the wild card might be, but I think it's okay to do a little bit that puts you out of your comfort zone. It means you're growing. It means you're like, you know, trying to do bigger and better things. So I do encourage people to lean a little bit into that fear.
If you are uncomfortable, you are learning, you are doing something different. It's when we're doing the same thing every day, we're just kind of going through the motions. So even as little as waking up at a different time can be uncomfortable for some people. Like not a lot of people want to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and exercise, but you know, there are doing things uncomfortable, is where change happens.
I love that. That's beautiful. Well, I'd love for the listeners to know more, like where they can find you from like a social media perspective. So would love to know where they can find more Kathy.
You can find me on Instagram, on TikTok, and on Facebook under Kathy's Cancer, and that's Kathy with a K. So I have a couple of my journeys on there, video journeys of, you know, the where I started, where I originally I have long hair right now. I had long hair before I started my journey and decided that I was going to cut it before chemo took it, before cancer took it. Did that, donated my hair, donated my wig. And then I am in the process right now. I have not cut my hair in 5 years and it's amazing to me how much hair has grown. So come July, I will be cutting and donating it again. So Kathy's Cancer. So you'll find me on all three right now, kind of recording anything that I do. I try to put it on there and add it to my link in bio. And I also throw on, you know, some words of, you know, positive words of advice and wisdom. I'm trying to come up with more of my own things, but if I find something really super clever out there, I will copy paste it and pass it along. You know, as a therapist, I really think that those things are helpful for us to have positive messages to move forward and to look at. And yeah, I try to pass that on as much as possible. So
I love that. Well, thank you, Kathy, for all your positivity, for all your resilience. It's really refreshing. I loved your page. I was looking at, you know, some of your amazing videos, and I know come your 5-year cancerversary, I'll be celebrating right there with you. You better be like videoing all this hair. Like, you have so much hair. People at home can't see her, but she has so much hair. It's amazing. And I want to see like this great cutting. It's going to be amazing.
It's gonna be a relief to finally cut it, I'll be honest. But yeah, I haven't dyed it. I haven't cut it. I don't curl it. I don't do anything to it. I don't even put hairspray in it. It's very virgin hair is what they call it. So yeah, I'll be happy to give it to some child who has I think it's called alopecia. I'll be happy to give it away. So
I love it. Well, thank you. Thank you for your big heart, Kathy, and for coming on to DJ Breast Cancer today.
Thanks for having me, Tina.
Thank you.